This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You are listening to Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Missed Apex Podcast, brought to you by MissedApexPodcast.com. We live F1. I'm your host, Spanners Ready, and I'm joined by Matt Two Rumpets. How's it going there, buddy?
Well, to be honest with you, I think my body's still trying to figure out what time zone it is temporarily living in, because, of course, it's on in the dead middle of the night for us. But aside from that, it was a great deal of fun to watch and somewhat less fun to have to write about simultaneously.
Yeah, so you're like staying up till after midnight to try and get your report out. But hey, look, after all the negativity, everyone panicking in Australia that there'd be no overtaking, racing was dead. After all that, this was a proper great F1 race. I mean, I just really enjoyed watching it.
Yes, I don't want you to get too excited, because in the post-race interviews, they asked Ricardo, so is this it? Is Red Bull properly number three now? Are you guys fighting, or is it track dependent? And he paused and his smile almost disappeared and he goes, track dependent.
Yeah, and condition dependent as well. A little sprinkling of grease, I reckon, and they're right back in it.
Absolutely. So any races with changing conditions, we can expect to see this kind of awesome racing. Outside of it, it's going to be the Ferrari Mercedes show pretty much.
Yeah, everyone do a rain dance. But remember, 2 weeks ago, when Ferrari won, you know, due to a Merck strategy error, and the internet declared that Ferrari was all powerful and I was wrong and an idiot. So now the opposite has happened. I'm just going to sit here and patiently await the internet's humble apology.
To be fair, the internet is still on about that wrong and idiot thing, despite who won the race.
We are an independent podcast hosted by MissedApexPodcast.com. We aim to bring you your race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. This show is safe for work. We're keeping it clean here so you can play this with kids in the background or in the car and at work. Matt, let's bring some fine guests on.
Let's.
Joining us this week is Autosport journalist, published Autosport journalist, Lean Angle podcast host. It's Chris Stevens. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, yeah, it's great. I mean, I'm very tired after the weekend's action, but yeah, I'm enjoying the weekend.
Did you stay up and report on FP1 and qualifying, and FP3 in the middle of the night?
I think the only report I haven't done this weekend was the FP1 report, but I still got up and watched it.
And also we have racing karting extraordinaire, Alex Cloggy Jeansy Van Jean. How's it going, Alex?
I am all good. How are you, Spanners?
Well, I'm good. I'm glad you're here, because unfortunately Bradley Philpott got delayed in traffic on the way back from racing some kind of tin top. We were really looking forward to having him back on, especially with the real racing action that's happened this week. So you are going to have to take us through the ins and outs of how the racing went down from a racer's point of view this week, Alex.
It'll be my absolute pleasure, because I thoroughly enjoyed this morning and then spent the rest of the day building a shed. Not a podcasting shed, unfortunately. Just a normal shed.
Let's talk about some quali. So much to talk about, Matt, this week, but we would be remiss to skip qualifying this weekend, because it was a fascinating indictment of where we are this year with the battles and with the outright performance. A genuine challenge in qualifying, something like, what, 0.18 seconds off the pace. Sebastian Vettel, second, really, really challenging the Mercs.
Yes, absolutely. Or as I like to call qualifying this week, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good news, the gap from Ferrari to Mercedes came down from Australia to China. And as you mentioned, Vettel in particular, Kimi again doesn't seem to be quite on his car. He was complaining about understeer all weekend long, whether it was understeer in his brain or understeer in his actual vehicle. You know, we can leave up to the viewers there. But it's clear that Ferrari have mounted a proper challenge to Mercedes, and they're not going to get by loafing around the track as they have done in the previous two seasons. The bad news was the gap from Raikkonen to Ricciardo. In the dry, it was almost a second from P4 to P5. That's not really good at all. But I think, Alex,
at least it's not 1.5 seconds to P2 or P3 like it has been for the previous few years. So we still got to take it as a positive that there's still all that going on. Yeah, we'd love Red Bull to be in it, but I think they'll catch up later in the year. But at least that gap is 4 cars back.
Yeah, I was going to say, which one would you choose, Matt? If you had to have a gap, you'd choose to have at least a competition for the front few places, or the front two teams at least.
You need competition for the podium. Without that, the race becomes boring to watch. And we've
got, how many
teams
are on the podium today?
And that's good. Got that, and that's good. We've got competition for the top spot, regardless of the conditions. And that's good. And that's good. The gap to everyone but Ferrari and Mercedes is the bad. And of course, we all know what the ugly was.
Would that be a certain young Giovinazzi? Yeah, really, really unlucky. It's a shame for him, because, I mean, we could talk about it now or a little bit later. The shine has come off with all the positivity he'd brought through from Australia to then bin it twice over the race weekend. And that can't have been cheap either.
Ooh, no. You know that Ericsson is not pleased about some of the checks he's writing at the moment.
Yeah, because that's right, isn't it? It's all Ericsson money that's funding his much more talented, faster teammates.
Yeah, Chris? Chris has an opinion, everybody. Hang on.
I don't actually know if I'm allowed to say this, so never mind.
Do it, or be judged forever.
Use the words alleged or I heard to insulate yourself from potential legal damage, my young friend.
what I will say is that, in defense of Giovinazzi, you know, he's done two races now, and in both of those races, he had no Friday running. Yeah, this time around, it was the same for everybody. But when you're only in your second Grand Prix, then, you know, that makes all the difference. So I'm not really surprised that he had a more difficult weekend.
No, it's actually not surprising at all. In fact, what was surprising was he did as well in Australia as he did. But it certainly killed the narrative he had going and the momentum he had going, whether fairly or not. That's the way things go a lot of times for these drivers. And it's not always their fault. And in fact, you know, if it's the fault of anything, it's how the media center is designed and the way water comes off it and soaks the track right there. Because that's what, you know, in qualifying, I guess, what did him in.
So Baha in the chat room says, you guys are being hard on Giovinazzi. Max did the same thing in Monaco last year. In fact, he crashed 3 times.
I was going to say, what happened to Giovinazzi this weekend and last weekend is typical what happens to a highly expected rookie, which is he goes and has one good race. The whole hype train gets massively behind him. and then pressure or a really tricky race in really tricky race cars happens, and he has a howler. Every rookie has them. Every single one of them on the grid, every single world champion has had hard weekends. And I don't diss Giovinazzi. He made the mistake, the same mistake twice.
Yep.
Which isn't great, but it's an easy mistake to make. And I'm not going to judge him too harshly. He gets a couple of races.
The problem is, you say he gets a couple of races. When Max did it in Monaco, he had his race seat. Giovinazzi doesn't have a race seat. This was his golden opportunity to have a solid race. All he had to do was beat, for goodness sake, Marcus Ericsson. He could have dialed it down to 80% and still looked good for that seat.
I still think that if Wöhrlein, for whatever reason, is unavailable for the rest of the season, then Giovinazzi is the person they will call in. If Giovinazzi wants that seat, the rest is down to Wöhrlein.
I'm willing to bet there's something to do with Ferrari engines costing a little bit less while Gio's in that seat.
Matt, though, was it not fairly impressive from Valtteri Bottas to get within 1.8? I know we're kind of damning him with faint praise, going, wasn't it great that he did a close second? But it was a close second. So he wasn't miles off the pace.
No. He was well inside the margin that we typically saw to Rosberg when Hamilton was on and Rosberg was off. So up until the actual race, I'd say Bottas was doing exactly what he was brought in to do, which was to pretty much be like a Rosberg, but without as much chance of running Lewis neck and neck. Yeah, Chris.
I think when you compare it to Lewis's lap as well, which was something pretty special. I mean, that is about as close to a perfect lap as you're going to see. So when you kind of take that into account as well, yeah, Valtteri is actually doing a pretty good job.
No one's arguing that he isn't. And in fact, I would say he was doing exactly what was expected of him and perhaps slightly better than they anticipated in qualifying.
Well, I mean, what I've been seeing a lot on social media is, a lot of negativity towards Bottas even before the race.
Okay.
But that's social media for you.
Well, you know, all those Rosberg fans are probably just upset that he's doing as well as Rosberg did. And, you know, they're very devoted to their Nico. And, you know, they get very passionate. Sometimes they don't even argue logically. Go figure.
Let's have a little bit of an argument. You might agree with me on this. There was penalties handed out to Romain Grosjean in particular for basically not slowing down enough past the Giovinazzi incident. And I, for one, I watched it on board. And for me, it absolutely, 100%, it looked like he was almost, yes, he might have lifted off a little bit, but he looked like he was coming around that corner thinking, if there's a way I can salvage this somehow and keep my speed up, you know, I'm going to do it. The rest showed him shifting up the gears as he's going past that. For my mind, when you've got an incident like that, you should, your mind should completely disappear from any kind of pace and speed. You shouldn't even be accelerating. You should be really literally ready to stop for an incident on track. And I felt that penalty was probably fair, and we should have learned by now that this is what you're meant to do. Also judge the FIA for just not doing a red flag straight away. But, you know, what's your take on it? You know, because he tweeted his telemetry out saying, no, I did slow down. It was a harsh penalty.
Well, here's my take. There's a reason I'm under consideration for a Formula E seat this summer in Brooklyn, and you are not. If you've looked at Grosjean's actual telemetry, he very clearly demonstrated a 45 kilometer per hour drop in his pace. Now, at the speeds at which they're running, let's call it maybe 200 kilometers an hour, that's a significant percentage. Last year, you were required to slow by 10%. At 200 kilometers an hour, that's 20 kilometers an hour. He doubled that margin. And as far as ready to stop is, I think a lot of people just miss how quickly the cars can stop. A certain amount of that speed has to be left to the driver. But I would say a 45 kilometer per hour drop is a clear indication that they're aware of the situation and looking out for it. And there's no way he's going to better his time losing that much pace. So yeah. I don't get the penalty. And furthermore, it's still on the FIA. It was clearly called for last year that any situation like that, red flag should be thrown. It was not thrown. That's what needs to be looked at. I don't think you can blame the drivers for this one. They did what they were supposed to do. Yeah, Chris.
I think it says a lot that, you know, even the drivers still get confused about what is classed as a significant drop in pace.
Yes.
Or what, you know, what is expected of them. And some people were saying, well, the checkered flag had already come out, so they can't red flag the session. They can still red flag the session at that point. They can do whatever they want. And if any, you know, it would have completely neutralized the session. It would have stopped people from completing their laps. They would have had to have gone straight to the pits. So I am a little bit confused about their decision on that one. I understand the penalty, but I think the circumstances were wrong.
Yeah. In other words, what this amounts to is the FIA saying we're now going to change the rules and you two are going to be made examples of, so everybody understands how much the rules are changing. I feel like if you look at the actual language in the International Sporting Code, it says slow and be prepared to stop. And I feel like if you look at the onboards, if Grosjean had needed to stop, he could have stopped. And if that's not enough, then the drivers need to be explicitly told what, you know, more directly, what is expected. Because
yes,
he gave far beyond what was previously in the rules, according to his telemetry.
Absolutely, so, I agree. So I think that does fall on the FIA mostly. It just felt like he was still driving aggressively past that. But yeah, I think technically you're absolutely correct. All right, guys, let's move on. Because you can call in. Where is it? You said you'd be home. You can call in. We're going to take calls later in the show. If you want to do that, just find me on Skype, Spanners Ready. Just need your app and one of those little dangly headphone things with the inline mic. Call in, tell us what you think. But let's move on to the race, because that is this week's Big Dirty News. We had a race, Matt, and we had a good one. Tell us about that start.
Oh, the start was so exciting. Well, first of all, for everyone who's a Lewis Hamilton fan, he got a good one, finally. Or again, or as expected, depending upon who you believe from last season.
And well, but, this is it.
He was on it. But what was interesting about the start was Vettel. Vettel was not on it. Not by which I mean he didn't start the race well, but like literally he was not in his grid spot hardly at all, but not ahead of it. Laterally, to the point where it was said to be looked at by the FAA. Do you have any more on that, Chris?
All I know is it was investigated and no penalty was found, but we did get some information in the WhatsApp group earlier that apparently in this sort of circumstance there isn't actually a regulation about it. I don't think they ever thought somebody would want to be on the side of their grid spot.
Well, this is it. Blackout19 in the chat room is saying the driver steward said there's no ruling for side to side, only the front line. But he also said he wouldn't get away with it a second time. So I think it's one of those things. It's like, it's so rare no one has actually decided to start on the side, apart from, wasn't there a race in the damp last year where Ricciardo moved off the wet patch and Hamilton didn't think he could, so he just sort of planted it in the wet patch and got a poor start?
Yeah, and I think pretty much their response to that was, well, yes, of course you can light up to the side of a damp patch if there's a damp patch on your grid spot. So if they say he won't get away with it again, then they've literally just reversed what they said.
It's almost like there's absolutely no consistency in the rule book at all, is there?
You would think. But it does give us plenty to argue about, so I don't want to be looking that gift horse in the mouth too much.
And Othnell in the chat room is saying that's because it's the Ferrari International Association is what FIA stands for. And they're not going to sit and ruin Ferrari's race just because he's off to the side. It does make you think, like, how far off to the side he would have had to have gone. Like, if he'd have slotted himself in between Hamilton and Bottas, would they have said, well, you know, there's no side-to-side rule. It's just the front rule.
Yeah, I've seen that in other sports, too. I've seen it in hockey before where someone showed up and literally just like stood in front of the goalie and smacked him in the face. And turned out there wasn't a rule against it. And then after that game, there was a rule against it. So, you know, sometimes people find loopholes and it is what it is.
Okay, then. So let's go through the chaos at the start. It's a very, very interesting start because, first of all, there was an incident between Perez and a new boy, Lance Stroll. And we will play a game of whose fault is that soon enough. And that caused the virtual safety car. So we can start with whose fault is this? Chat room, I want you to join in. Now, guys, we have to remember that in the courtroom of spanners, there is no racing incidents. We always have to assign blame. Whose fault is this? Is from my wife. This is how she runs our marriage. As soon as anything goes wrong, before solving the problem, before escaping the fire, we have to establish why and how it's my fault. So let's start with you, Chris Stevens. Really was wishing that Bradley Philpott was going to be on for this one. Whose fault was that incident, given we can't have a racing incident? I'm saying Perez.
Okay, it was a racing incident, but for the sake of this, I will... Well, see, the thing is, you know, if you're in Stroll's position, you can't see an awful lot out of your mirrors, and I think the last thing you would expect is a car trying to go side by side with you through turn 10 at the start of the race. So I think Perez was maybe slightly ambitious in his maneuver. Because I have to give, you know, I have to apportion blame, I will say Perez, but it was a racing incident.
You put me in an awkward position. If I agree with you, I disagree with Spanners, which I want to do, but I also want to disagree with you. So is there like a third side? Could it be both their faults? That's what I'm going
to
go with.
No, you have to align yourself with me and admit that I'm right and your best friend.
Yes. Okay. Whatever. I don't know. If it was V8 Australian supercars, Perez would be at fault. Period. Chug it up the inside, get hit, it's your fault. And that kind of is like the onus is on the overtaker. But we're not in V8 supercars. And if there's anything that's been clear to me beyond belief, is that if you're on the inside and you're headed to an apex, if the person outside closes the door and there's contact, it's rarely going to be their fault. It's clear the ruling is you have to be situationally aware and leave room for the other car. And honestly, it's not like Perez was just barely alongside him. He was fully alongside him coming out of the previous turn and had dropped back a little bit in the braking zone because, of course, being on the inside, he needed to brake sooner. Stroll just lost track of him, I think, because he's a rookie and inexperienced. And certain drivers on the grid now, I'm not going to name names, Romain Grosjean, had a terrible time with this when they first got started. Some of them even got sent.
Oh my God, wait, just wait. Alex, we can hear your live stream coming through.
And honestly, it's stood off.
Jesus Christ. You have sanctioned this stream.
Sorry, I'm really sorry, guys. At least you can hear me now.
Yeah, the only good thing about that is I sound even more cleverer than I thought I did.
Okay, so so we've got Alex back, and we are doing Whose Fault Is This? Let's just go through a little bit of what the chat room are saying. Hannah Hassel in the chat room says, well, I haven't seen it, but Perez, which is great. On the Gas is saying racing incident, which is deliberately misunderstanding the point of the game. Clara has a much better appreciation of it, saying it's both their faults. I mean, I can get on board with that. Double the amount of blame is absolutely fine. I think most of the people are saying it's Perez, but Blackout is saying that Stroll turned in on Perez. He got no penalty because he took himself out. I think he got no penalty because they've just decided they're not giving penalty, so no one can talk about them stifling racing. Just let them race in whatever fashion they see fit. I know, Chris, you're one of those just let them race people.
Yes, I am, because it works in a lot of other series. I will say this about Stroll, though. Driving a lot better than he was in Australia. Even though he only had, you know, one session to work on the car, it looks much, much calmer in the car. And actually got into Q3.
Yes, that was a brilliant quarter of a lap he did in the race.
And also not what we're talking about. So minus points for that. While Alex gets his video up and running, why don't I just say that I think you said he dropped back a little bit, but I think it was clear he was certainly the car behind. So they're not going side by side abreast into that corner. Perez has made that decision to brake later to get in, whereas Stroll is obviously being slowed down by the train in front of him. So I always find it unfair. So basically, Stroll's options are he either has to take every corner with a car's width on the inside in case somebody decides to jump in there on the train, or he has to drive on the inside of every single corner. So I do have sympathy for them because, you know, the rules aren't laid out to say what you can and can't do. But in this situation, it really just felt like Perez says, well, I'm just going to brake later, hope I get to that apex before Lance Stroll, which he didn't. He broke later. He got to the apex when Stroll was pretty much already there. And as far as I can see, Perez effectively drove into Lance Stroll.
I'm going to disagree with your assessment of the incident in terms of your description of it, but I think we may have an already winner of comment of the week.
Yes.
Matthew Graff in the chat room suggests that the real problem was that it was Obama's fault.
Thanks a lot, Obama. Alex, can you hear us? No, he's still not there. Wow. Ah, wow. Alex has really Sansoned this stream, hasn't he? He really has. Okay,
Right. So from watching Perez on board, he was alongside of Stroll from the previous corner, and his front wheel was always well in front of Stroll's rear wheel. And Stroll's rear wheel and his front wheel are what made contact at the next turn. So the idea that he was behind him at any point, I think, is misleading.
Okay.
To people who didn't get to see the onboards. It wasn't like that at all. He was inside and alongside him from the previous turn all the way up, and he made progress up and then began to drop back as they approached the turn, but he never got his front wheel back out from alongside him.
Okay, good. So we all agree I'm right. Well, moving on a little bit, this is where it really got interesting for the race and the championship, because obviously the guys were on interchangeable conditions. There was a bit of a gamble. Sainz gambled and went out on slicks and really, really benefited from everyone coming in, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, do you know how much wheel spin he got off the line? He was completely swamped by the field.
Yeah.
Went wide at turn one.
Yes.
Spun at turn three as well. But it did work as he finished seventh. That was amazing.
Yeah, so what I heard was Sainz after the race. Apparently, they were going to send him out on the wets. And Sainz was like, no. You must send me out on the slick tires. And they're like, but dude, it's wet. He's like, no. Send me out. And then he immediately spun and he was all the way at the back of the field. It worked out. But after the race, he came up to Marco, who was like, you know, good call, like the gamble worked. And he goes, if you could have seen your face, but I knew I was right. the team did not want him to do that at all.
Yeah. So, it's a very brave call and well sort of hung in there. Oh, it's a shame that Kvyat ended up retiring. So, you know, we couldn't get a real assessment on how well he raced after that. But certainly tactically, you know, he rolled the dice and he went well. The only question I would have is obviously.
You should be on mute when you do that, Jeansy.
Sorry. Apologies.
And
I don't know what's going on. My Skype's playing funny games, but we're working now.
So it would have been nice if we'd have had a direct comparison to Kvyat to just see how good that was. But, you know, it's worked out this time. But you have to just bear in mind that for that tactic to have worked, you really did need the virtual safety car and then a real safety car. So still, you know, it's still a low probability gamble, but he took the gamble and this time it's paid off. And, you know, it's very much like the Jensen Button rolls of the dice. Had it not paid off, we wouldn't be talking about him today, but fair play on him making that gamble, because we got to see a hell of a lot more of that beautiful Toro Rosso on screen. And it's still surprising me every time it turns up on track, on camera, doing well, just how stunning that livery really is. But yes, of course, the most important thing is the actions of Sebastian Vettel in the virtual safety car. He thinks this is the time, we've got to come in now. He doesn't obviously know there's going to be a real safety car. So he's thinking it's not a free pit stop, but it's a cheaper pit stop for him to come in and get the slick tires, Matt.
Significantly. Like, generally, pitting under the virtual safety car will probably half your pit stop window. So given their proximity to Mercedes and the fact that I think the delta was around 20 seconds, 21 seconds, that 10 seconds for them puts them ahead of Hamilton when he comes in for his pit stop.
Mm-hmm.
If no safety car.
Yeah.
If they didn't get stuck in any traffic. But again, with the virtual safety car, the gaps are the gaps. So you can look backwards and you have more time to hit those gaps.
Yep.
So it was really a brilliant call. It was the only call for Ferrari because they were in second place on the road. It was the right call to come in for the virtual safety car. But as you point out, the safety car that followed completely destroyed their strategy.
Yeah.
Not terribly, because after all, where did Vettel finish? Oh, that's right. He finished in second. So it's not like they lost anything other than, of course, the race win because of the safety car.
Yeah, so what caused that was Giovinazzi again dropping it. But the real a big loser, of course, was Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas, who he ended up getting stacked. And that's what I missed the first time round. I was like, how did he end up in that position in the first place? Because he actually got stacked waiting for Hamilton, then obviously lost places. So, you know.
Yeah. How far did he drop back when he got stacked? He was in, what position was he in when he got when the stack happened?
Well, I think he was second and then he got pushed back to sixth. If I'm remembering correctly,
where was he positioned corrected though?
Second.
So he was genuinely second on the road.
Yeah, because Vettel and Raikkonen
did the
virtual safety car. But what happened because of the Giovinazzi accident was that the entire field was brought through the pit lane, and because it was the first lap of the safety car, Hamilton still had enough of a gap to pull into his stall, get tires, and get back out ahead of the rest of the field. So, I mean, you know, sometimes you're good, sometimes you're lucky and good. And just this particular Sunday, Hamilton was both.
This is what happened when my Skybox crashed. I missed the whole pit stops during that. So I missed that. But to be fair, it doesn't matter what he did because his biggest error was you can't spin when you're warming up your tires. I mean,
it's bad, isn't it?
God, it's so bad. It's so bad. I mean, in all honesty, I've done it before in a wet race, but I was on slick tires on a go-kart track and I'm not a Formula One driver.
Yes, but you know,
very, very, very early in my career.
Who is a Formula One driver, a very successful Formula One driver who did that at the exact same track a few years ago?
Cool thud.
Michael Schumacher.
I remember Schumi. I remember DC doing it somewhere.
Michael Schumacher dropped it under a safety car in China.
Ah,
and
that's a nice one. I didn't know that.
And frankly, do you know what? It's so easy to do. It's very easy for us and the fans to sit here at home and oh, what an idiot! He spun under the safety car going 60 miles an hour. No, I'm sorry. It was very cold. The tires were cold. He was trying to get heat into his tires. It's very easy to overdo it. Yes, it is a bit. It's a very clumsy thing to do. I'm not trying to, you know, defend him, but I don't think he deserves the slack that everyone's given him. What really hurt him was the second spin while he was trying to recover.
The second spin.
He ended up, yeah, getting back onto the grass again, which was a little bit unfortunate.
I don't know if you guys mentioned this when I was off, but did you guys see Sainz getting back on the track after he spun on lap one?
Carry on.
Oh.
I didn't see it. I knew he had a spin, and that was why he dropped all the way
He had his spin on lap one, and then as he spun back round onto the circuit, he actually hit the barrier on the grass trying to get back onto the circuit. But the question I want to ask though is, if Bottas had still been in a Williams, would this just be a funny moment and now he's being judged because he's at the big show?
Oh, I think he would have been judged even in a Williams. It's just too funny not to remark on.
It was, but it's just compounding it. He needs a weekend to beat Lewis.
Yeah, and he needs it soon really, because reputations can slip very, very quickly. And if he starts getting this reputation of just being the clear number two, he's going to lose the team. He's going to lose the pit wall. And it's going to become no-brainers when it comes to strategy calls. There's going to be no, let's keep it even. There's going to be no, let's do all we can to get Lewis to the front.
It's going to hit his confidence as well. Because if all of a sudden he goes, I can't beat this guy. As soon as that's in your head, you're done. And as we said last week, he has a one-year contract. 1 year. And at the moment, he's not looking good enough to be sort of instantly signed up to what the next step is, probably a three-year deal. At the moment, I don't think he's getting that, but that's opinions.
Is he not already losing the team, though? Because his engineer called him Nico.
That was like, brilliant.
It's like when you accidentally call your girlfriend by your ex's name. That's awkward.
Do you know, my wife, for the first 3 years of our relationship, I did call her Emma, which isn't her name, which is my ex-girlfriend's name, for about 3 years. And she was very understanding and forgiving. So
how are you still married?
How are you still alive? Yeah, it's not like...
Jesus!
Yeah, like it's not like she's unattractive either. Like, she could have done a significantly better.
I think people are mistaking the reason Bottas is on the team. He wasn't brought in to win. He was brought in to not lose. That's what I'm thinking. What were you thinking, Chris?
Well, I was pretty much... Well, I wouldn't go as far as saying he was brought in to not win, not lose, as you put it. But I think the team very much already had... Lewis as a number one in mind, because let's face it, Valtteri coming in and challenging for the world championship straight away is a highly unlikely scenario. They knew that if they were going to be challenging for the championship, it would be with Lewis. And, you know, what we say about, you know, the strategy calls, pretty much the vast majority of the time, unless Lewis is well out of it, they're always going to be in Lewis's favour now.
Alex, respond to On The Gas, who says, my understanding is Bottas is new to the team and just completed his second weekend with them. Still adjusting to the team?
When you step up to a big team, the team that's at the front and has a title-winning team, you have to finish. If you're going to finish behind your teammate, you've got to finish right behind your teammate and can't make silly rookie mistakes.
It was a rookie mistake. Yeah.
Spinning under a safety car like that, you'd expect it from Stroll, you'd expect it from Giovinazzi. You don't expect it from Bottas, who's been in the sport for 4 years.
Okay, let's get an update from Patrick Green, who is our dedicated fantasy GP coordinator for the Missed Apex Team League. Wrong But First, how's it going, Patrick?
It's going good, guys. Can you see me okay?
I cannot see you, but I can hear you, so that will do. Let's start with the most important part of the fantasy GP. Am I beating Matt Trumpets?
Well, let's go ahead and find out. Matt Trumpets is currently in 55th place in the Friends League with Team Glory Lasts Forever with 259 points. And Spanners of Spanners Ready Racing is currently in, drumroll, 29th place with 280 points, which I have to say,
wow, that's
pretty impressive.
Out of how many?
That's pretty good. We have 204 people now too. So that's a genuinely impressive thing. So well done.
And how are you doing, Patrick? Obviously, you're winning within your household.
No, my wife is destroying me. She's currently she's in Spanners' neck of the woods right now. She nailed the podium today completely perfectly. And I got nothing. I was so close on the safety cars, and then they counted the virtuals as regular ones, and I lost out. Also, I want to note quickly for everybody playing that it is now that you'll incur a penalty now if you do more than 10 trades from now to the rest of the season.
Ooh.
So starting with Bahrain, we have no longer this unlimited, you know, trading season, the silly season kind of thing. So, you know, be ready for some intense scoring deficits to come up. It's going to be a lot of fun.
So we've got to like consider it like engine management and save it throughout the team. So let's finish up with how a few of the rest of our crew are getting on and then how people can join the league. I've noticed that the table is being propped up by Ryan Ferret-Ferris in dead last place.
Yeah. Ferret's not doing great. There's also, suspiciously, there's two accounts with Ferret in the title, and both of them are right at the bottom, so I think that doesn't bode very well for how he's doing. But I have to say, Mr. Van Gene's doing pretty well. He's currently in 60th place with 255 points, putting him only 4 points behind Trumpets. But again, Spanners, you're running away with this one right now. You're, you know, 29th place.
And top of our league is suspiciously, and I'm going to call a big fat BS on this, Fantasy GP is run by BadgerGP.com. Top of the league is the Badger GP editor, Craig Norman. So I am calling absolute fix, and I may even consider just booting him out of our league altogether.
Yeah, he's number one, yeah.
And congratulations to Josh Covey, who's saying he's 9th place in our league. So Patrick, it's a great amount of fun. It's actually a great way to judge, you know, putting our money where our mouth is, our reputations on the line, if you like. How can people join in our league and add to the 204 friends of Missed Apex we have in that league?
Yeah, let's make it to 300, guys. It's fantasygp.com. Go to friends, go to wrong but first, type it in, and type in 839-783. That's 839-783. And again, starting in Bahrain, it's going to get pretty tough, so let's do it.
Thanks for your time, Patrick. We'll see you next week.
All right. See you then. Bye.
Awesome, Matt. I'm beating you.
You're going to lose long term, so I'm not worried about it. And besides which, I match my number, and that's more important anyway. Style over substance. Yeah, Chris.
Before we move on, I did want to make a pitch in for comment of the week. Baha Mutiamat says, finally, someone makes sense. Chris. So I thought we'd pitch that in.
I don't
surely
like
he gets
it.
Kicked out the live
stream. Yeah, I was going to say, I might have to block him from that. And that can't be how you pronounce that name. I pronounce it Baha Mutia. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's very easy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So why don't we move on to one of the key talking points, which is DRS. Its role it's taken, the overtakes in general, which I think were fantastic. We've obviously got quantity over quality. Before I hand that over to the panel, I want to say a massive thank you to the patrons who support us at www.patreon.com. Patreon.com. Search Missed Apex Podcast. Please consider helping support the show that brings you a show that hopefully you enjoy. If you'd be willing to go there and give us a tip jar donation, we're talking micro payments, a dollar, two, maybe three. If you're a fancy millionaire, $1,000. It means nothing to you. All the patrons, though, however, are invited to join our Slack group where we talk F1. Apparently, we talk about food, guns quite a lot, worryingly. Due to our US contingent. It's generally a good time and a good place to be. So I would appreciate anyone. It makes my day when we get people supporting us on Patreon. Thank you very much for your consideration. Let's get back to DRS, Chris, and why it's working, why it hasn't worked in the past. But here in China, it really seemed to do the job of just putting the cars in the right place to fight.
Yeah, we've become so accustomed to drivers just cruising up to the back of people and breezing past with the DRS that having seen the race today, a lot of people were saying the DRS isn't working. But you've got to remember what DRS is for. It's an overtaking aid. It's not supposed to complete the overtake for you. It's supposed to put you in a position to overtake and allow the driver to complete the pass. And I mean, I'm no denying it. DRS is less effective this season. I don't know why, because logically, you would say there is more downforce, so there is more downforce to dump when you open the DRS. So maybe that's one for Summers on the next tech time. But we're getting instead is proper overtaking.
Yeah, well, I think one thing also to bear in mind is that the length of the DRS is set by the FIA at each track, and how long the DRS stretch is has an obvious impact on how much overtaking can be done under that. And it may be that we're starting to see the effect of Ross Braun's suggestion.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I mean, we know he's not a huge fan of it. Starting to winnow out a little bit how easy it is to get by just using DRS. But a corollary to that, or a point you could also think is, wow, what if they'd kept the wings as they were and just gone to these new tires? You might be looking at being able to get rid of DRS altogether because the aero wash was about a second and a half behind. But as we saw with Vettel on Raikkonen, unlike in years past, your tires wouldn't crumble after a lap, staying close until you get a chance to get by. And those passes, even though there were fewer of them, were so much higher quality that you see the tension building as the gap comes down, and then the inevitable multi-lap, multi-corner battle to get by, a lot more entertaining to watch. Yeah, Chris.
I cannot agree more about the purity of the overtake. There is not really any kind of DRS overtakes that I can remember looking at and thinking, wow, that is something. I've seen two in this single race that I'm definitely going to be nominating for Overtake of the Year at the end of the season.
Yeah.
But that tells you everything you need to know.
I think it was something special. Watching Sebastian Vettel getting past his ailed teammate, his aged teammate, Kimi Raikkonen, who was, yeah, frankly, he was at sea today. But what you saw was a guy of slightly faster ability, struggling and really having to race and cultivate an overtake over 10 laps. So maybe we'd like to have seen it a bit quicker. Then he had to go and see the same thing with Ricciardo, and ending up banging wheels. It was fantastic, proper racing. And I'm sure that's what you guys have to do on a kart track, is, you know, really eke out those overtaking maneuver corners or even laps in advance.
Well, this is the whole thing. Everybody wants to see, everyone thinks they want to see slap bang, cars just overtaking at every single corner. And as I've said dozens of times, F1 isn't ever been like that. And part of the excitement of an overtake is sometimes how long it takes. Cruising up at 2 seconds a lap and overtaking easily isn't difficult because you've got that overspeed. But when you've got two cars exactly the same, or two cars very, very similar, you have to pick your point. So what I think we're going to see this year is we are going to see much less overtaking. There's no denying that. But what we're going to see is much, much better overtakes, like Ricciardo and Vettel. That was fantastic. That was some of the best wheel-to-wheel stuff I've seen in the last few years. That was absolutely brilliant. Ricciardo didn't want to give Vettel any more than he had to, and they bang wheels and the paint went off the tires, but no damage, no one moaned. Vettel didn't cry. Someone hit Vettel and he didn't cry on the radio. I was staggered. But no,
because he was having fun. You could just tell that he was really relishing that as well. And it shows a lot about him that, yeah, the race win was probably taken away from him. It's not his fault. Nothing you can do. Batten down the hatches, really go for it and try. And he seemed to just really concentrate on that battle. And he's just really impressed me today. He's gone up miles and miles in my estimation.
Come on, go that far.
I really agree. And I'll tell you what, Ricciardo, he knew exactly what he was doing when he was squeezing over Vettel to the inside of the track. However, I do think we still need to address the issue of aero, because, like you say, Alex, cruising up to the back of someone at 2 seconds a lap, overtaking should be easy. But we're talking about the Ferraris and the Red Bulls as if they were an equal, and they just weren't. Red Bull were 40 seconds off the lead by the end of the race. So really, Vettel getting past the two bulls should have been a lot easier than it was.
Well, part of that was he was held up by his own teammate for several laps. We didn't get to see what he would have done to Verstappen, because Verstappen decided to drive straight instead of turn right. I mean, admittedly, because his super softs were done at that point. So I don't know how easy it would have been for Vettel. Raikkonen was suffering with understeer, so he couldn't get close enough through the medium and high speed turns leading to the long back straight for the DRS to be effective enough for him to get by there. That was his thing. And that's why you saw Vettel get by him so early on. But it was several laps, and it definitely put a dent in his ability to make a play for the lead.
Okay, just a couple of chat room comments there. Patrick Green says, my heart is still pounding from the Vettel-Ricciardo moment. Sandra Reynolds, driver's kiss, that's called. And Bahamutiamat, personally, I think Lewis underestimated this year's tyres in Australia. He had more grip than he thought. So just a bit of racing rust over the winter, which he has now cleared out.
I wouldn't call that racing rust, as in more just lack of knowledge on the thing. And if we're going to go back to Australia, it was still a strategy call, but let's not go backwards because it's painful. Anyway, go on, Matt.
Because I get yelled at for bringing up a topic that literally just finished. You want to go back to the whole last race? Come on.
Yeah, but Alex,
that comment was a race ago, so I'm not getting on with it. That's why
Alex can't possibly upset me more this week, so that's fine. It's honestly, you may as well just go all in now. It's like when I know I've saturated my wife's irritation, I can just do whatever I want.
Awesome.
Chris, I got to say, Red Bull's decision to use the super soft tire was pretty genius, because in those conditions, that super soft tire was working really, really well. And you saw everybody who was on that super soft, as soon as the safety car came in, started carving their way through the field. And yeah, it meant they would definitely have to do that extra pit stop. But the pace advantage they had after that pit stop pretty much encouraged everybody else to stop as well.
If by genius you mean they had no other choice, then yes, I agree with you completely. Red Bull couldn't get the soft tires working in the right temperature window. Let us not forget that the track temperature was 15 degrees at race time compared to 32 at quali. They were never going to get the soft tires to work. They had no choice. They made the soft tires work. Yes, absolutely. Or the super softs, rather.
I'm surprised anybody made the soft tire work. Really? I'm surprised they didn't all jump on the super soft tire.
Oh, who made it work? Oh, Ferrari and Mercedes. Who has the most downforce? Oh, Ferrari and Mercedes. That's why it worked.
The thing with the super soft is they didn't make it work as well as they should have done. I commented in our chat group the second that they went to super softs and everyone else went to softs. I'm like, well, the Red Bulls will be in the lead come five laps, I think I said, because that's how much quicker that tire should have been. But they did. They got ahead of the Ferraris, but they didn't really go anywhere. And that actually just shows how far ahead the Mercs and the Ferraris are, that they were on the much faster tire and they weren't much faster.
Well, I think it was a warm up thing as well, because once that soft tire was working, it was working pretty well. It was just in that initial stage after the safety car period, the Bulls and everybody else on the super soft tire, they had heat almost instantly.
You know who else had trouble with tire temperatures? Go on, guess.
I feel like I should know this, and I am frantically running through a list Bottas. Of facts in my head.
If he was still driving for Williams, the answer would be correct there, Jeansy. Yeah, Williams struggled with tire temperatures. After the safety car, they were never able to get Massa's tires working right. But that brings up an interesting corollary about the change in the DRS, which is that defending now matters again.
Yes.
Because Massa defending from Ocon was also really a lot of fun to watch. So in many ways, I'm kind of happy with this new formula. If the field spread can be brought down some, they will have lucked into something that they were desperately searching for.
Okay, boys, it's time for any other business. Matt, it's the battle of the Bulls really, really shaping up now. And I've put it down to this. In the wet, Max is king. In the sun, Daniel Ricciardo dominates. Why? Because Daniel Ricciardo is from a sun-baked hellhole where everything's trying to kill you, and Max is from a country that is literally under sea level. This explains everything.
I could not agree with you more. In low grip situations, Verstappen has an ability to drive the car. I mean, let's look at it. He's made up 9 places at the start. It's just phenomenal. His poise in Brazil last year, let's also not forget that. And here's the amazing thing. Considering how underpowered and poorly designed their car is, they literally were responsible for almost all of the fun of the race. They motivated all of the strategy that happened, with the exception of Ferrari in the first virtual safety car, simply by the way they drove their race. Chris?
I can't believe we've gone into the show this long and not talked about Max's first lap, because for me it was absolute textbook stuff and the sort of thing that should be demonstrated at driving school. It was so calm and undramatic, just fast. There was nothing, no big jockeying about, no big things in the steering wheel. It was just doing things a lot better than the cars around him.
Let's not forget, though, that, I mean, Helmut Marko did suggest heavily that that is distracting Matt. I love it. I love Matt's cat being part of the podcast live stream. But there was suggestion, basically, that Max had gone for a more wet race setup, whereas Daniel Ricciardo was on a dry race setup. So surely that goes a long way to explaining Max's advantage. I mean, he's gambled on the conditions, not just with tyres, but with his setup as well.
Well, according to a lot of engineers, there isn't actually so much of a difference between a dry and a wet setup these days. And also, it was wet for 4 laps. They were on the inters for 4 laps before they changed. If anything, that if there is, you know, a wet setup, if there is such a thing, would have hampered him for the vast majority of the race. And I haven't seen that on any, you know, official means. So I'm slightly hesitant over the idea of that.
It's funny you mention about Max being calm and collected on driving around but still going fast. That's so much of the karting side coming out of it. The big thing with a lot of karting, and obviously we all know his incredible background with karting. The whole point is you're so often on slicks in wet conditions. Obviously they weren't on slicks, but the understand and feel. You know, it's why Max is so good in the wet. It's why Seb is very good in the wet. It's why Lewis is very good in the wet. All the guys in Formula One who've got really good karting backgrounds are all really, really good in the wet. And yeah, I just think Max just has that confidence. It's that, I hate using the term, I really do, but that Senna-esque feel. He was always talked about how great he was in the rain. He just found the grip, and that seems to be what Max is really good at doing.
Chat room is saying, why is Chris questioning if there's such thing as a wet setup? I don't know. I think he just regurgitates things the smarter kids at Autosport say now. Now he's got
Chris. I've got to back Chris up, to be fair. The last couple of years, they've been talking a lot about the fact there isn't that much of a difference in a wet and dry setup.
Here we go. Bahar is saying he's a Hamfosi, but the kid, Max, has huge talent. He has a huge talent threshold. And Patrick's saying the way he plays with traction is incredible. But lads, you know, he really does shine when it's wet. So what I want to see really is this same straight fight between the two guys in the out-and-out dry as well, because most races are raced in the dry. I've still got my cash on Ricciardo being slightly more the complete package at the moment, Chris.
I would like to go back to your comment about how Danny would be sort of king in the dry. I think towards the end of last season, it very much became even between the two of them. And I think that's more what we're going to see this season, because for me, Red Bull, they've got the best, the most dynamic and quickest driver pairing on the grid. And that just makes me happy.
What we have seen, though, is the ever-glowing smile of Daniel Ricciardo disappear for the last 3 weeks. Haven't really seen him smile. Actually, didn't smile all the way through testing either. Bless him. And I'm a big Ricciardo fan. But, I think the pressure is very, very soon going to start to get to him, especially if Max starts to match him in the dry.
Alex Van Gien, where can people find you online? Because you are a real racer, and you're someone who takes karting very, very seriously, and people should listen to you and follow you.
You can find me on Alex Van Gien on Twitter. I'm not doing a lot of racing at the moment. I'm doing a lot of sim stuff, but I'm not doing a lot of actual racing at the moment. Hopefully going to start next month. I thought I was going to have a race this month, but it's not going to happen. And I need to lose a considerable amount of weight before I can get myself back in a car and represent myself properly.
See, I thought it was just the camera angle of the live stream, but okay. No. You're looking great. Yeah, fresher, fuller.
It's all right. My wife's already told me she's not my friend today because I've spent the entire day on our deck, and I'm now apparently a different race to what I was this morning.
A different race. Oh, right. You've got a nice tan on the go. Fantastic. Because I still maintain that you're some sort of Greek. Chris Stevens, your career is going from strength to strength. People can follow you online and at cstevens_journo. That I've learned it. I finally bothered to learn it. And you're still writing stuff for Autosport in their 700 series.
For the 750 Motor Club. So I've got two race meetings for that this month. So yeah, keep an eye out for that. I'm still doing all the stuff on Formula Spy as well. I was doing most of the stuff for them this weekend, actually. You can also find me on the Lean Angle podcast talking about all the bike racing that's happening while we're on this show, actually.
So you've got to miss it. You've got to miss the witchcraft. See, I have to say witchcraft because I know that some of the patrons are now playing a Mist Apex drinking game, and I know what you're up to, and I am going to make sure you spiral towards your drunken decay. All right then, guys. Are there any other business? Chat room, you're going to have to help us out here. Who has a transcript of the Alonso radio calls? Because I think, you know, Alonso, you can't tell whether he had a good race or not because his teammate was out. But if you listen to him, he certainly had an amazing race, Matt. The race of his career, the best race of his life again. The best race since Australia 2017, he says.
And let's not forget amazing defending and that wonderful battle with Sainz right before his
chaff
broke. Yeah, which I agree. It is amazing how often his car breaks as he's moving backwards through the field, but it still broke later than Van Dorn's did. So I guess at least there's that. Chris?
Alonso just continues to amaze me. He keeps putting that car in places it does not deserve to be, because reportedly the Honda engine is running out of electrical energy deployment about halfway down that back straight, which just leaves them nowhere in terms of speed. Alex looks quite excited.
Did you see Bottas go past Alonso down the straight? It was like he was passing a G P2 car.
Funny that.
It was amazing. The closing speed was incredible down that straight. It's like he wasn't even there. It's like when you watch the WEC and you see like different classes of car passing each other.
It was like it was an out lap for him, and he was getting out of the way of someone on a qualifying lap. It was unreal.
It does kind of put the spotlight on Stoffel Vandoorn, and I worry about Stoffel Vandoorn because it seems to be happening all too often in F1 at the moment, where this amazing young talent will come in and he's so fresh-faced and full of life and potential, and they end up in a poor car and get outshone by a more experienced teammate, and then that's them on the reject pile all too quickly. And I really fear that the same is going to happen to Vandoorn. I hope that it's not.
Especially when you come in at McLaren. You know, when you come in at a Sauber or you come in at a Toro Rosso, you expect to not get the results. But when you're a kid growing up, McLaren's a team you want to be with. You know, McLaren's a team that you see yourself aspiring to win championships with, and that's just not going to happen. I don't think we should go into a whole big conversation about how rubbish McLaren are at the moment, because we've done it to death. But yeah, it's a shame for Stoffel, because the boy's got some serious, serious talent.
The chat room's come through with some of the Alonso quotes. I am pushing like an animal. I am quickest on track in the corners. When they said, I can't remember who they said had the fastest lap. He said, well, I'm the fastest in the corners. We need more rain now. And also, nice of him to report that Bottas had some car damage to show he's looking out for his fellow racer.
If you want to move on from that, I have a couple of other things from kind of the guys at the bottom end of the top 10. Magnussen, while we're talking about McLaren rejects, he was eighth for Haas, using that super soft tire to great effect, which is the first time he's actually impressed me since his debut. And Esteban Ocon is quite an interesting one, actually, because during the safety car period, when they were sort of coming through the pit lane to avoid the Giovinazzi incident, he actually missed a pit stop that he was supposed to have. That was a bit of a team miscommunication, apparently. And they said that cost him quite a significant amount of time, actually. So for him to still finish 10th, quite impressive.
Yeah, and if we're going to talk about things at the back, can we also talk about Grosjean and his passing in the end of the race?
Yeah, it's a shame he got stuck behind Palmer for so long, because he would have been right up in the thick of the action with the Force Indias and Magnussen. He did some really good stuff. That one on Massa, turns one and two.
Yep.
Pretty impressive.
Absolutely. And the thing is, if you look at Magnussen and the Haas and you look at Grosjean and the Haas, and you begin to think that they might be a legitimate midfield team this year, whereas last year they were sort of seemed to be more of a flash in the pan and then really struggle. I think Haas has some real potential, and we're going to see a lot more of it this year. Yeah, Jeansy.
Does the ever-increasing performance of Haas show how much Ferrari has improved that engine?
That's a big chunk of it, but they're also responsible for their own chassis this year, and they're doing a decent job with it. And that was, I think, a lot of people's concern. Everybody knew last year's performance was a lot of borrowed Ferrari stuff. This year, it's a lot more on them outside of the power unit, and it seems to be working pretty good. And that's a good thing for the sport, I'd have to say.
Good. And you mentioned Palmer before, and I tell you what, Palmer's got to hurry up. He can't wait as long as he did last year to finally get on the pace, because he's up against Nico Hülkenberg this year.
Yep.
And if
agreed.
He can, I mean, qualifying wasn't his fault, and he was on par to get himself through Q3. So I'm not going to criticize him for qualifying, because he just got really unlucky because of Gio's crash. But he's got such a tougher opponent this year. And if he can't be within 2 or 3 tenths of Hulk, he's done for.
To be fair to Palmer, he was caught between two strategies in, you know, you had Sainz who started on the slick and then everybody else who pitted for slicks during the race. He came in at the end of the formation lap and so had already lost quite a significant amount of time and couldn't quite make that up. And to be fair to him as well, he was only a place behind Hülkenberg.
Yeah, but how far? And he had a 15-second penalty. That's the thing. That's the thing to go on. And the thing is, I mean, I was watching because I like Julian Palmer. I really want him to do well, because from everything I've heard, he's a really nice lad. I know he sometimes doesn't come across it on telly and stuff, but through Brad, because I know Brad knows him. I've heard he's a really nice bloke, but his pace was never good. The whole race doesn't, when he was on fresh tyres, when he was on worn tyres, his pace was just never there. So he's got to pick the, he can't take as long to get on the ball as he did last year.
He can't. And Baja says, guys, stop making excuses. Palmer is no good. I know you guys have a thing for Brits, but he's garbage. Yeah, I mean, that is a big part of it. If he wasn't British, I'm not sure I would be cheerleading him so much. But he is one of our Brits, and we don't have many on the grid. So I really am hoping that he can get it together. We have a caller on the line, none other than Fortis. Oh, my goodness. What, you must be a happy man. The biggest Hanfosi we know on the internet. How is it going, Fortis?
Overall, the race was a good race. I did, there was a couple of things in it that I'm still a bit cheesed off.
Tell me them.
The one being the Seb starting position thing. Kind of in Japan last year, Charlie basically said, listen, after the Ricciardo incident,
yep,
that he expects everyone to line up in the grid slots. Second, Max.
Yes.
The Max and Ricciardo move. Again, I still think this whole moving in the braking zones thing should be outlawed.
Yeah, actually, I'm kind of glad you brought that up, because I had wanted to get to that before the show was over. You know, everyone was like, we want to see Verstappen against Ricciardo in the dry. Well, we got to see it at the end of the race, and it was spectacular. But again, as you say, it was Verstappen defending with his mirrors in a braking zone to the point where his teammate had to go outside and lock up to not have a collision. And I don't know, for me, I think that's crossing the line a little bit between racing fairly and really putting someone at a disadvantage. There will be an accident eventually because of that, because someone will not be able to get around to the other side of the car fast enough, and he and the other person are going to be taken out at a fairly high speed. It's just going to be the end. But they should have penalized it. They shouldn't let the drivers do that. And it should have been made clear, because it absolutely flies in the tradition, you know, the expected rules, etiquette of driving.
Exactly,
That had been followed, but was unwritten.
Fortis, you must be a very, very happy man with your man Lewis Hamilton taking victory and closing up the World Championship drawing level. Is he your driver of the day?
It's a toss-up for me, because I thought Sainz had a very good race, despite what happened with the spin. But for him to actually take the decision that, listen, I'm going to start with a slip. His team boss wasn't too happy about it. But he said, listen, trust me. I know what I'm doing. I'm going to start with the slick. But I'm going to put on my Hanfosi cap and I'm going with Lewis.
Thanks for your call, Fortis. We'll see
you
again.
By the way, this is what you call a beard.
Ah, sick burn as he goes out. See you later, Fortis. All right, let's find out who your things of the week were. Loads and loads of talking points. It's a dream race for a podcast, and we could have gone on for 2 hours, but let's find out, Matt Trumpet, who was your thing of the weekend?
Ooh, who was my thing of the weekend? I think my thing of the weekend had to be the weather, because without it, the race wouldn't have been this good.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, merciful Poseidon, for providing your moisture on the track. Chris Stevens, what was your thing of the weekend?
Thing of the weekend for me is going to be science, yeah.
Yeah, very impressive. So, but you crediting the tactic, or you think he was racing generally well? Because, you know, that 9 times out of 10, that's not going to work, that gamble.
Yeah, but I think, you know, gambling on a safety car, in a wet race, a safety car is almost inevitable. So I'd say, yeah, on the balance probability, the way he drove after the first lap, and his racecraft as well, very, very good stuff.
Nah, I like Carlos Sainz, but I think you're rewarding a chancer on this occasion.
So he made Fernando Alonso look like a chump at the hairpin.
I could make Fernando Alonso look like a trump driving that Honda if I was in a shopping trolley. So I'm not giving him too much credit for that. Look, we've got to address not just the results, but the method. If your kid runs out into the street but doesn't get hit by a car, you don't say, well done, you know, it worked on this occasion. You address the method and say, don't generally bolt out into the road. Alex Van Geen, my favorite ever panelist. Why don't you tell us who was your thing of the weekend?
My thing of the weekend was the Chinese fans who turned up with the biggest, most huge Sebastian Vettel banner and spelt Vettel wrong. That was absolutely hilarious. And the great thing was the live feed kept cutting to Vettel, who was laughing his backside off in the car because they put two L's at the end of his name and no E.
Didn't they eventually have, did they just magic marker it so that it was right?
Something. But it was just such a really amazing, elaborate banner, and they just really screwed it up. It was hilarious.
All right. Well, really, tell you what, still makes me laugh. We'll add in an extra category this week for overtake of the race. Hang on, I haven't done my thing of the weekend. Well, that was going to be an overtake, so I will kick off. I will take the obvious one and make my panel of experts scramble around for another. It does have to be Verstappen, Vettel, a 10-lap overtake on his teammate Kimi Raikkonen in the same car, not being assisted by DRS and mugging him into turn six. So that is my thing of the weekend and my overtake of the race. Matt Trumpets, who do you give the overtake of the race to?
Grosjean on Massa, because doggone it, that was a thing of beauty.
Chris Stevens.
I'm worried nobody's going to mention Vettel on Ricciardo, but I want to annoy you, Spanners, so I'm giving it to Sainz on Alonso.
Yeah. Why don't we give it to Bottas on Alonso while we're at it as well? I can really see why Autosport have taken you on board. Fantastic journalism. Van Gien, overtake of the race. What impressed you most?
Perez on Stroll.
No, should have been penalised for that. He should have been in the pit lane for a drive-through.
I missed your conversation on it, but I was listening. But no, I'm still not giving any blame on that. But I wouldn't have made that move up the inside of a rookie. But no, I'm sorry. The move of the weekend has to be between the battle between Vettel and Seb. It was just
Vettel and Seb are the same person. They are the same person.
What did I say?
Vettel and Seb. They are really? Yeah.
Dan and Seb.
Yeah, at the end. Yeah, no, and it was. And that was a real treat. So, yeah, absolutely. I can see why that went away. So who missed the apex this weekend? Matthew, we will get to comment of the week. Matt Trumpets, who missed the apex for you this weekend?
Sorry, you caught me distracted. I was trying to get in a comment from the chat room before we moved on.
No, do that then.
And that was Matthew Graff's thing of the week was Lewis Hamilton, more than an hour after the race was over, going out to engage.
Yes,
with
I saw Mercedes fan. Tweeted out that the sort of phone video of behind the scenes of the photo taking opportunity. Now, I think he's been on it all weekend. I know some people were saying, well, let's credit all the drivers that do that, but you know, I do think that he does, you know, seem to go above and beyond, and he genuinely loves it, and he genuinely seems to be motivated and heartened by the fans. And it has to be said, the Chinese fans were fantastic as well. Something about that part of the world, the Japanese fans as well, who, unlike Alex Van Gien, I see as distinct people who are separate and not just, you know, oh, let's just lump in all Southeast Asians together. But yeah, they have a different attitude towards their fandom, an unashamed sort of screaming excitement at these kind of events. Yeah, let's go to Chris Stevens. Who missed the apex for you?
It's got to be McLaren.
Again, just in general.
Alonso, he had a good chance at points. Against all odds, he had a chance at points.
Well, the second DNF isn't their fault, because when Alonso's car gets overtaken in the lower part of the points, everything just breaks down. There's nothing they can do about that.
That's very true.
Well, now that Steven said that as his missed apex of the weekend, now I might have to put, I was originally going to go with Jeansy's tech because, I mean, obvious, right? But now your choice, how could you choose that when Ferrari's strategy with Kimi Raikkonen is hanging in the breeze about half an inch?
Oh my gosh, yeah, we brushed past that completely. He was the one person who was saying, yeah, my tyres are gone, and they just left him out there forever and just be like, oh, no, you can finish the race. He's like, no, I can't. I really, really can't.
They were like, but the computer says you'll finish on the podium. He's like, I'm not even going to be able to make the right-handed turns and stay on the track if you keep me out any longer. And they killed any chance he legitimately might have had to be on the program by trying to split his and Vettel's strategy.
That's true. Blackout 19 says Stroll should have missed the apex because, you know, there was a Force India there. Van Gien, who missed the apex for you? That's hilarious.
I have two, but I'm going to go for the one that's going to shock most people. Lewis Hamilton missed the apex because he now has a stupid nose ring that looks ridiculous.
Oh dear, fashion
faux pas.
Honestly,
what is he doing? But no, the other thing for me was those horrific, horrible Renault race suits. I have a real thing for race suits, but they were horrid.
All right. Well, for me, the Missed Apex Award has to go to the man getting his chance at the big boy table, Valtteri Bottas, his second race for the dominant team in Formula One for the past 4 years, and just binning it under the safety car all by himself, trying to warm up the tyres. And I say this as someone who means him no ill will, but that is a man that needs a result next week. I should imagine that that race cannot come quickly enough for that. Let's see if anyone's got an award for this.
Daddy, I want a pony. And I want it now.
My nomination for this week's Pony Award for petulant behaviour has to go to Kimi Raikkonen with a 60-lap rant about the state of his tyres.
Were you clearly not listening to Max Verstappen whine on and on and on about Grosjean not being given blue flags when he was 3 seconds up the road, and the rules clearly state blue flags don't get thrown until you're 1 second behind the competitor? He was like, you must get him out of my way because Ricardo might pass me. And they were like, the rules, Max, tell Charlie will do me a favor. But the rules, please. Oh, it was sad. Bubblehead, mature thinker, and then he sounds like my 8-year-old when she doesn't get her fourth dessert.
But the thing is, even if they'd got Grosjean out of the way, you still got Ricciardo behind you. Nothing's going to change, and I don't think that wasn't the problem. The problem was you had a faster car behind you, Alex.
And Ricciardo was right up Max's backside and wasn't complaining about understeer.
Yes, that's a very good point. Does anyone else have?
No longer have a pony award because you two have nicked both of them.
Chris, have you got one?
You for some of Alex's tech.
In fact, in the Slab group, somebody said, Spanner's nailed the disappointed dad face when Alex came back on the stream and cheered. And it's true. Matt, you've been observing the chat room this week, a very, very well populated chat room this week. If you want to find the chat room details, why not go to missedapex.com? What did I say? missedapexpodcast.com. No one watched the live stream this week. God, it's terrible. Okay. missedapexpodcast.com/livestream, and you will see a link there to the YouTube channel, and you just pop on there and you will see the chat room and join in. We have had, between 30 and 40 people in the live chat this week. It'd be great if we could bump that up, but the comments have been constant through there. Matt, who has impressed you enough to give this week's
comment of the week?
God, there's been so many good comments.
There really has.
My little scrolly thing is not working the way it's supposed to.
That's okay. We need a better system for coming up with the comment of the week, because you're right, there has been a lot.
Finding his comment of the week, I'll go back to starts. Isn't it, because Spanner's like this when I said this earlier, isn't it amazing how all of a sudden, so rapidly, Lewis's starts are good again? It's almost like it wasn't his issue.
Yeah, and you've got people like Damon Hill still, when they talk about last season, still saying Lewis Hamilton was weak on his starts. Even though, how many people does it have to come? How much evidence do you need before you accept that Lewis Hamilton clearly had a clutch issue off the line last season?
Well, we're also waiting. Can I make a prediction for Bahrain? Mm-hmm. Which will be that Kimi Raikkonen will challenge for the victory.
You shouldn't drink on these shows, Chris. It's unbecoming, and you just say ridiculous things like that. He's not going to challenge.
Hear me out, my friend.
No.
Because Bahrain has been the hunting ground of Kimi Raikkonen in the past. And yes, he may have struggled with understeer quite sufficiently this weekend, but China is a front-limited circuit that will highlight such an issue. Bahrain, the complete opposite.
Yeah.
And it is also going to be the first proper test, I feel, of Ferrari's new power unit against Mercedes, as it has 4 high-speed stretches and some lovely overtaking opportunities. So I definitely think he will at least put a very, very strong challenge to Vettel, if not win the race.
Right, I will take you on that money. I know you're a skint student or whatever, but fiver. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, here's my fiver to your fiver. Vettel out-qualified and out-positions, barring a DNF, Kimi Raikkonen. DNF and it's off.
It's off the boards.
Yeah.
I'll say that Raikkonen beats Vettel in qualifying in the race.
So you nailed it. You said he's been really good there in the past. And that is where Kimi's talent is, in the past. Matt, how are we getting on?
I think we have it. I mean, and I just need to say, first of all, there were many contenders for today's comment of the week. But given the fierce level of competition, I felt we had to go with a proven winner, and that would be Blackout 19.
Oh, no.
Commenting Stroll should have missed the Apex, yes, as there was a Force India there.
Comment of the week.
Matt, tell the good people where they can find you online.
You can find me at MattPT55 on the Twitters. And should you need some reading material to distract your spousal unit while you watch your Grand Prix in peace, please visit SpannersReady.com. Or we missed ApexPodcast.com now. Which one?
Yes.
Which one?
MissedApexPodcast.com.
And look for the link to Amanda Weaver's novels.
Awesome. Find me at Spanners Ready Online. Follow us on Twitter at Missed Apex F1. There's another race next week. We have absolutely no time to wait. And now we know that we have a season to look forward to. So we'll see you after Bahrain here, 8 p.m. on the live stream on YouTube. Search Spanners Ready. And remember that wounds heal, chicks dig scars, and glory lasts forever. This was Missed Apex. I know Alex thinks that there's a chance I'm going to be angry with him, but to be honest, you know, I'm not angry. I am disappointed. Just a little. You know, I did a whole tech video. I did a video on YouTube.
And then they drive into the pit wall again.
So did Giovinazzi, right, when he crashed, he sort of wiggled off on the last turn. Did he then hit the pit wall on the way through? Is that how he
went out? No, Ericsson went wide.
I think Ericsson came back up the crack, scared the shit out of him.
Yeah, Ericsson went wide,
and then Giovinazzi went over the wet patch and lost it. Easily done.
Yeah.
Did you in a go-kart at Blackpool Park. It was terrible. I went through the quickest corner on the track, and it was raining. I just touched the white line and spun
around. Chris, when you go karting, do you make them paint the racing line on? Because that's what you have when you do Formula One online.
Hang on.
He races with the racing line.
You play racing games
with
the racing line.
Yeah.
No, only the F1 game, because I can't be bothered to fiddle with the settings on him.
That's the worst excuse ever. That's not true.
I barely even play it. I'm not going to spend half an hour.
Yeah, but you can figure out the racing line within a few laps, can't you? You start out on the edge, you come to the middle.
We call the racing line in our sim group. We call it the Billy line.
The Billy line.
Billies do.
Unbelievable. And then why would you then post?
Don't know what they're doing.
Why would you then post that on social media?
I just spat on my pop shield.
But why would you post on Twitter a clip of you racing with the racing line so everybody knows what a billy you are?
When I play a sim racing game, I don't have the racing line on.
Well, we've only got your word to take for it. In my experience, 100% of your racing is with the racing line on, from what I've seen.
I did a sim racing championship 3 years ago and came sixth. So
was there only six people in it?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.